buckle up. It's showtime.
Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's gonna do it? You? I have a greater responsibility than you can possibly fathom. You weep for Santiago and you curse the Marines. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know. The death, while tragic, probably saved lives. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties, you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. We use words like honor, code, loyalty. We use these words as the backbone of a life spent defending something. You use them as a punchline. I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the blanket of the very freedom that I provide and then questions the manner in which I provide it. I would rather you just said thank you and went on your way. Otherwise, I suggest you pick up a weapon and stand a post. Either way, I don't give a damn what you think you are entitled to.
Inconsistent Reese on the Radio live on this September 17, 2012. We are back. We are live on the air. We had some equipment break. Things are falling apart. Damn it, we are a rag ship of trouble this evening on Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com. The number is 347-308-8701. I'd like to thank all the people who have pushed us, literally pushed us, to the 10,000 mark. You know who you are. We've only been on the air, what? We're just passing, just past the nine-month mark, didn't we? We're not even a year in.
Yep.
Yeah, we're not even a year. Yeah, we just passed the nine-month mark, and we are excited to have each and every one of you be a part of the Reese on the Radio show. Most of you listening because you're trying to find Reese saying something provocative. But let me tell each and every one of my critics tonight on Reese on the Radio why that you are going to hear the most provocative monologue you've ever heard in your entire life. You are about to hear the most provocative monologue you've ever heard in your entire life. Now, I want to make sure that I got this right, so that I queued it up. It's sitting right here in front of me. Make sure that I can read it myself for all of you to be able to read yourselves. I'd like to talk about a movie called Pretty Baby. The movie Pretty Baby stars Susan Sarandon and Brooke Shields. I don't know how many people out there know this movie. There may be a few of you. I didn't know anything about this movie until 2005. When the host of the Star and Buck Wild Morning Show, Star, introduced it to me on the air in 2005. Never knew anything about it. And he talked about it on the air with me. And I was like, really? This was an actual film? And then I looked it up, and I found out about the film. And I didn't do a lot of research on it. I was just stunned that this was an actual film. And did a little more research about this film, watched a little more footage of it today. I was stunned. Now, many people may be asking, why is Reese talking about the movie Pretty Baby? Does it have to do with his court case? No, not at all. It has to do with art. Folks, it has to do with art. And the state of affairs today. Now, there is a filmmaker who did some 17-minute video on YouTube that the White House and the Obama administration is saying is responsible for the outburst and the outrage happening in the Middle East today. This 17-minute video is the catalyst to the murders
of four innocent people. Yeah, four innocent people. This one Coptic Christian makes a video calling the Prophet Muhammad a pedophile and a womanizer, an abuser, has caused outrage in 23 countries. And the media finds one, two, three people out there who are screaming about the damnation of this video. I believe President Morsi of Egypt is saying that we need to arrest this man and put him in jail, in an American jail, for putting this movie out there. How dare he incite the Muslims? Which brings me to Pretty Baby. The director of this film, Pretty Baby, put a 12-year-old girl on the cinematic screen in 1978 to have sex with a grown man. She is prepped by the women in the film, Susan Sarandon as well, prepped in the film, told her what it is that she should wear, what she needs to do to entice this man. Antonio Fargas, who plays the, I guess, the piano man or whatever, he's in the movie telling her that she needs to wear diamonds around her neck to show the man what he's getting before he sexually abuses this 12-year-old girl in a brothel. They're all preparing her. It's an event in the film, folks. If you've seen it, 12-year-old girl being prepped on cinematic screen to have sex with a grown man. Roger Ebert, critically acclaimed critic of the films, says that this movie is a classic. Says that it doesn't just promote pedophilia, but it explains a nuance of Americana. This is, no. If you don't believe me, look his review up yourself. If you don't believe it, I'm going to get the review right now so that you all can hear it for yourself. Critic reviews of Pretty Baby, 1978. Chicago Sun-Times, Roger Ebert. Okay, it's popping up right now. So let me read what his review was. Louis Malle's Pretty Baby is a pleasant surprise after all the controversy and scandal surrounding its production. It turns out to be a good-hearted, good-looking, quiet, illegatic movie that's a coup from Malle, who sometimes seems to dare himself to find acceptable ways of filming unacceptable subjects. His subject this time is a 12-year-old girl who is raised in a New Orleans brothel where her mother works. She plays in the garden. She rides a pony. She likes ragtime music. And one day she's auctioned off to the man who will deflower her. This is, of course, tragically perverted. But Pretty Baby itself is not a perverted film. It looks soberly and with a good ideal of compassion at its period of history and the people who occupied it. The Pretty Baby of the title is named Violet and is played by Brooke Shields as an extraordinarily beautiful child. Before anyone had seen Pretty Baby, Malle was being accused of exploiting the fact, but he's thoughtful and almost cautious in his approach. given the film's subject matter, and its obligatory sex scenes, Mallet shows taste and restraint. And Shields really creates a character here. Her subtlety and depth are astonishing. Mallet places her in an extraordinary, well-realized world. The Storyville section of New Orleans, circa 1917. The movie plays infinite attention to detail and looks and feels accurate. We get to know the brothel so well with its curving staircases and Baroque furnishings. We almost feel we live there too. And we get to know the people too, especially the strange and cynical brothel keeper named Madame Nell, played by Frances Faye, who observes at one point in her gravelly voice, "I am old and I know one thing, life is very long." An almost a peak line, but she invests with infinite wariness. She also keeps it well-run, established, populated by hookers like Violet's mother, Hattie, played by Susan Sarandon, who dreams of escaping the life and eventually succeeds. She marries a prosperous businessman from St. Louis and moves north. She wants to take her daughter with her, but Violet won't go. For her, this house is home. Violet has, in the meantime, gained a protector and confidant, played by Keith Carradine. The silent, eccentric photographer. He seems at first to feel no passion at all as he takes his infinite pains to arrange the lights and shadows in which he possesses the prostitutes. There is, we feel, the possibility that he's asexual. But he does have a special feeling for Violet, a 12-year-old. And on that night she is auctioned off, there are two long, anguished close-ups of Keith Carradine's character and of the house black piano player, Antonio Fargas. Both of them clearly feel the auction is an outrage. Neither one speaks out. They are both creatures of Storyville and know how things are done. After Hattie goes north, Violet stays in the house for a time and then goes to live with a grown man. Their relationship is, of course, a strange one, made more complicated by the fact that this experienced 12-year-old prostitute is still just a little girl. One of the film's most heartbreaking scenes has Violet sitting under a tree playing with her doll. She is pretending that the doll is herself and that she is her mother. There is such a curious mixture of resentment and envy in her game that we cringe. Pretty Baby has been attacked in some quarters, as child porn.
It's not,
says Roger Ebert. It is an evocation of a time and a place and a sad chapter of Americana. The ragtime music and the blues that fill its soundtrack take on a deeper meaning in the context of the story. And we are reminded that the artist who sang, "Do You Know What It Means to Miss New Orleans?" knew very well, and perhaps for that reason, miss less than their listeners. The bottom line, ladies and gentlemen, is that raping a 12-year-old girl is artistic in the minds of the Hollywood elite. But the movie about Muhammad should result in the questioning of a filmmaker and the demonization of this filmmaker. Don't you find yourself oddly questionable of the fact that Hollywood has not responded? That no one in Hollywood has said a word, and those who have, Bette Midler, Bette Midler suggests that we should arrest this filmmaker.
A lot of people have suggested that.
Well, I would ask Bette Midler, is it okay to rate Brooke Shields at 12?
Well, they didn't rape Brooke Shields at 12, but they perpetuated that they did.
Well, didn't they? Well, that's what the movie did. It's a movie. They didn't. This is a movie about Muhammad. This is not fact or fiction. This is someone's depiction of Muhammad. This was somebody's depiction of, and as far as Roger Ebert.
First of all, freedom of speech. I mean, and second of all, you know what? Who gives a shit what anybody in other countries thinks? Those suckers hate Americans. They tout all the time. I hate America. Fuck America. Kill Americans. Let's, you know, burn the American flag. America is the devil. America is this. Well, good for you. You can continue to think that. Stay your ass in your own country. Don't come over here. And don't worry about what the hell we're doing in this country. Stop watching YouTube. Watch YouTube in, you know, in Liberia or
Libya.
Liberia. Oh my God, in Libya. Or wherever. You watch YouTube only in your own shit. Don't watch American YouTube.
The bottom line is that I wanted to bring that up for one major reason. And that is, this is what's happened to our country today.
No, this is what our government is making our country
really
do today. Because if Barack Obama would get off of his Jay-Z dinner and whatever else he's doing, and address the freaking country about what the hell is going on, then maybe we could move forward to a peaceful America. But while your ass is still in office, we will get nothing done because you're a punk and you ain't going to do shit to those people.
Look.
And what you should be doing is making them pay for what they did to our American citizens on their soil.
White Mike in Florida brings up a very, very important factor about this. He mentions Roman Polanski, which I think is a brilliant analogy. I don't know why I didn't think of him, Mike. You're absolutely right. I want to go back to Whoopi Goldberg on The View, who said, and I quote,
Didn't she say something really derogatory about him?
No, this is funny. Okay, so if you don't know the story of Roman Polanski, Academy Award winning, Golden Globe winning, he is probably one of the most revered movie directors in history. I think Adrian Brody just won a film not too long ago. In fact, the film that you remember when Adrian Brody kisses Halle Berry on the stage on the mouth when he wins the best actor. Okay, the film that he was in was called The Pianist or something. I'm almost certain that's the name of it. The Pianist. Okay, The Pianist.
Yes.
Did I say Pianist? Yes. The Pianist. Pianist.
Pianist.
Yes, Pianist. That film is directed by Roman Polanski. Anyway, Roman Polanski in Jack Nicholson's home, okay, takes a 12-year-old girl, gets her high on champagne and Quaaludes, and anally rapes her. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's been a fugitive of the United States since the 1970s.
He fled didn't they just...
To Paris.
Okay, I know who you're talking about.
Okay. And Whoopi Goldberg, when this story came up a couple of years ago, she said on the air that what he did wasn't rape.
What?
Yeah, you heard what I said. She said it wasn't rape.
Well, what was it?
I don't know. According to Whoopi Goldberg, there's
rape.
There's kind of rape, and there's rape. Whoopi Goldberg, look it up online.
I remember reading about it.
She says that what Roman Polanski did to this 12-year-old girl wasn't rape. It wasn't a real rape.
Well, did anybody ask her about it? It was a 12-year-old girl.
They don't care in Hollywood.
He sodomized.
That's right.
Well, and not only did he sodomize her, but he drugged her and then
sodomized her.
That's right. So, what is that, date rape?
It's worse than date rape. It's just rape.
But according to Whoopi Goldberg.
No, according to Whoopi Goldberg, it's not rape.
Well, what is What is her, did anybody question her?
Question whom?
Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh, crazy people went nuts.
What did she say?
She tried to apologize for it.
What did she say?
She said that during the discussion, she said, I want everybody to understand that what Roman Polanski did wasn't rape. That's what she said on the air.
Okay, and what was her rebuttal to people's questions?
She was apologizing to anyone who was offended by her claim. She doesn't change her claims. She apologizes for it.
Of her claim.
Oh, it's Roman Polanski and we don't criticize him.
Why?
Because he's a Hollywood icon and he can rape any 12-year-old he wants to.
And she must not have really been getting raped. She must have really wanted it because it was Roman Polanski.
Yeah, that's right. What was she doing there in the first place? Was she there because she tried to get a career? Huh? Was she trying to get somewhere? Did she not think that she owed a little to get a little?
Rape, Whoopi.
Not according to Whoopi Goldberg. It wasn't rape. You see, my point is that this is okay within the Hollywood elite. But guess what? Now, all of a sudden, the tides have turned. The tides have turned and the rules have changed. With this guy talking about Muhammad because what? Because this looks bad on their American president and they need a scapegoat. And they are willing to sacrifice their own principles in order to do it. That's what makes this troubling. That's what makes this sad and pathetic.
This is more than troubling. This is about to cause an all-out war.
Oh, I'm hoping that it does.
No, I don't.
Oh, I'm sorry, dear. I'm sorry. Look, with all of my love and respect for you, that's too bad. I want a war.
No, I don't want a war.
No, I do. I want a war. I want people killed. I want people slaughtered and bombed. I want their country to smell like asphalt.
And I don't want to die.
Well, you don't. No. I'm not suggesting that we should die. What I'm saying is that others should.
Well, that's fine, but I don't want to be.
I want bloodshed.
And I don't want you to be one of those
people. No, I don't want to be one of those people either. But I want bloodshed. I want people to know that we are willing to kill for our principles. If their principles are so important and they're willing to bomb themselves and put a, strap a bomb on themselves or kill their neighbors, if they're willing to do that to make a cause, I want to let them know that we are willing to just blow you up. Forget about strapping a bomb onto you. We'll strap a bomb on you the old-fashioned way. We'll fire it at you at 750 miles per hour. You want to die? Let's have it. Let's have at it.
And we'll take out the whole town instead of one store.
That's it. No. Listen, don't trouble yourself about being a martyr. We'll make you one. This country has turned on its ear behind the President of the United States today.
This country hasn't. This president.
No. This country has turned on its ear behind this President of the United States. This president has turned this country into the most radical place that we've ever seen in our entire lives. And until we get it right, it will turn further and further on it.
And can I tell you that, I worked in Potomac, Maryland today in a very high Jewish populated community.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were stores shut down until Wednesday for Rosh Hashanah. There were Jewish ladies, little old Jewish ladies, walking around with buttons on their necklaces.
Please tell me.
That said, vote Democratic.
Oh, my God.
I was shocked. I wanted to take a picture, but I couldn't catch her. She was too fast.
Damn it. I wish she had done that. I would have put that up on the website.
A little old Jewish lady walking around with a button that said, vote Democratic. Are you an idiot? What land do you live in? Do you own a TV?
Probably not.
Do you have radio? Do you hang out with any other Jewish people? Because the Jews ain't looking so kind on the Democrats today.
That's just sad. We'll take a break and we'll take your phone calls at 347-308-8701. We've got Edward in Connecticut and, of course, our good friend, Dennis Applebaum. Stick around. We'll be right back at Teresa on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. We'll be right back.
is Bob. Bob is a normal guy. He has a good job. He works hard to provide for his family. And he tries to keep himself informed on current events. There's just one problem.
I don't think President Obama is doing a very good job.
Bob is a racist. There's nothing worse than having a racist around saying hateful things.
I don't think it's unreasonable for people to have to show ID when they go vote.
Whoa, Bob. Slow down with the bigotry for just a minute. People like Bob are still very upset that there's a black man in the White House. As a result, they oppose President Obama's policies. Not because they're bad policies, but because they just don't like black people. How could anyone oppose such great policies? They're awesome and are working super well.
But how do I talk about my political beliefs without being a racist?
Let's give Bob a few pointers on how not to be racist.
Did you know that under President Obama, more people are on food stamps than ever before?
Bob. That's racist. Just because something is true doesn't mean that it's not bigoted.
But how can something be racist if it's true?
That's a racist question.
We need to secure our southern border to stem the tide of illegal immigration.
Racist! Calling undocumented workers illegal simply because they're here illegally is proof that you hate Mexicans.
My adopted son is Mexican.
Doesn't matter. Still racist.
I see.
I like Barack Obama. He's a light-skinned African-American with no Negro dialect.
Now that's racist.
Nope, not so fast there, Bob. It's only racist if it's said by someone who doesn't support President Obama and his policies. Susie is a Democrat, so it's okay if she says it.
That doesn't make any sense.
Sure it does. A liberal can't be racist. It's not possible because liberals support the things that are good for the black community.
So a conservative and a liberal can say exactly the same thing, but only the conservative is racist for saying it.
Now you're getting it, Bobby. For example, when a conservative politician says something that's not directly racist, but is construed that way by liberals, he loses his job, like Majority Leader Trent Lott. But when a Democrat in the same position turns out to be a former Klansman, like Majority Leader Robert Byrd, he's a liberal hero!
It's all starting to make sense now, so I can say all sorts of racist stuff as long as I vote for the right people.
Right! So if Susie says,
I am so proud of myself for voting in the first African-American president in 2008.
Her statement has no racial implications whatsoever. But if someone says,
I voted for Barack Obama last time, but I'm thinking about voting for Mitt Romney this year.
That person is totally racist.
Hold on a second. How can someone who voted for Barack Obama the first time be racist just because they don't vote for him this time? They obviously didn't care about his skin color before.
Sometimes people don't realize that they're racist until later.
How can someone become racist in 4 years?
That's a clown question, bro.
I'm so confused. I don't want to see the country go down the toilet, but I also don't want the people at work to think I'm a racist.
Well, remember, Bob, if the country is ruined, you can always blame it on George W. Bush.
You're right. I'm going to vote for Barack Obama because I'm not a racist.
Way to go, Bobby. Remember, racism in the workplace is never cool.
I'm Barack Obama, and I've never seen this ad. Didn't even know it existed.
Hey, homie.
Look what I got.
Just for you, bro. Fist bump. But the GOP is going to put you all back in chains.
I say it's an honor to be a food stamp president. Food stamps feed the hungry. Food stamps save the children. Food stamps help the farmer. Food stamp helps the truck driver. Food stamps help the warehouse. Food stamps kept the store. Food stamps hire people and feed people. Food stamps save people from starvation and malnutrition. Whenever you attack feeding the hungry, you undermine the moral authority of our faith. Give President Barack Obama a big hand. Show your love. Show your appreciation.
This could very well be the stupidest person on the face of the earth.
This September 17, 2012, 32 minutes after the hour. Let's go to the phones. Ed, Massachusetts. You're on the Reset Radio 347-308-8701. Hello, Ed.
I'm not Ed.
Hello? Is this Dennis?
Yeah.
Why did okay? I'm sorry, JC, but Ed in Massachusetts. Sorry, Dennis. How are you?
Well, you know, he asked me where I was from. I said from outer space because everybody off the planet is listening to Reese on the radio.
So,
and before we start,
what did
there's
you think
two
about-
things of personal interest. First of all, how is Mary feeling? I hope she's better.
She is better. She is. She's a lot better than she was this weekend. She was god awful. Nobody could be sicker than her. I'll be honest with you. I don't know.
Well, I know somebody
whether or not
who
she
was
had
sick
to.
A certain Jets
okay,
fan.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was sicker than her, but I mean,
but
she
you can
was,
understand
I,
Jets do crash.
Let me take the microphone and speak to myself. I'm feeling much better, gentlemen, and I appreciate everyone's well wishes on Facebook. And my husband was so kind to take very good care of me. It was much appreciated. So thank you, sweetheart.
Even
she
during halftime?
She had the bubonic. What did you say about halftime?
Even during halftime, you were kind to her?
No, I was absolutely. I was a personal mess. She had to take care of me during halftime. I was a mess during that Pittsburgh game. But nonetheless.
When are you going to learn that Jets crash? That's what Jets do.
Yeah, forget about the Jets. I don't want to talk about them. When they lose, I don't want to talk about the Jets. What did you think
about
my opening?
I could care less if they win or they lose. I still got to pay my bills, to tell you the truth. But let's talk about Democrats on display. And you've been around, as I have. You remember 11 September 2001, when radical Muslims attacked America? Remember what President Bush did? He was advised while reading the school children. He spent four additional minutes with the children and walks out calmly so not to panic the children. And Democrats criticized Bush for this inaction and later claimed 9/11 was Bush's fault. Now let's skip up to...
Especially if you watch Fahrenheit 9/11, that's exactly what Michael Moore implies.
Now let's move up to 11 September of this year. Radical Muslims attack America. Where have we heard that before? President Obama skips 50% of his daily intelligence briefings, and he failed to take action even after receiving notice of the attack 48 hours in advance. The next day, he skips another daily intelligence briefing and attends a party in Las Vegas. 3 days later, while the flag-draped coffins of murdered Americans arrive home, Obama's officials announced he'll attend another party with Beyonce. More U.S. embassies come under attack while Obama parties. Democrats praise Obama for being cool enough to party with Beyonce. Does that make sense? Not to me.
Well, Democrats really do.
Let's
go further than that. Dennis, let's go further than that about the hypocrisy. Try this on for size. I want to talk about going further on. There's a new book that talks about 9/11. It's called like the 500 Days. Somebody's gonna JC, look up this new book. It's called 500 Days or 500 something. Mike in Florida will probably remember the name of it, and he'll call in and let me know what it is. But there's this new book.
It's Jewish New Year. I don't think he will.
No, Mike will know. This new book called 500 Days or 500 something. It's this new book coming out. The New York Post did an expose about the book. And in the expose of the book, it primarily focuses on the warnings that the Bush administration got in April to the attacks on September 11, 2001. And this book is supposed to be so damning of the Bush administration. It's supposed to be an inside story to what has happened. Now, when that story came out a week ago by the New York Times, the New York Post, 2 weeks ago, everyone had this on their social media. Bush knew, he did nothing, Bush knew. And then this attack happened on September 11th. And the book is literally being pushed aside. Why? Because now reports are coming out that the Obama administration knew days in advance that this attack was coming and they did nothing.
Everybody knew on 11 September, worldwide, every year, the anniversary, always tighten up your security.
Of course they knew. They're supposed to know. And what's interesting is that the September 5th briefing that they say that Barack Obama skipped, and then the briefing after the attacks happened that he skipped, they're saying that this is insignificant. Doesn't matter how much they want to avoid it. Doesn't matter how much the press wants to shy away from it. The bottom line...
Let me ask you something else, Reese, and I don't want this to be taken the wrong way by certain people. There are stories floating about over the weekend that our murdered ambassador happened to have been homosexual. And this also was a very serious provocation to Muslims because they said that he was raped, he was sodomized before and after his murder. So the question is, knowing this, is this, again, a case of political correctness going amok? That you don't put a man in that situation in a Muslim country where, it, God forbid, you are attacked, that you will be murdered in a vicious way?
Dennis, that's a very provocative question, only because I said that before you just stated it. Are there rumblings that he may have been gay? But I understand he had children. I mean, not that matters. I guess in the age.
I mean, we have gays serving the government all over the place. And there's nothing to take away from them. I'm just saying, as a matter of practical common sense, do you put U.S. personnel in places where it'll be just another excuse for the populace to try to kill them? Bad enough as it is now.
You're absolutely right. Let's go to Ed in Connecticut. Hello, Edward. How are you?
Hey, Reese. How's it going?
So what did you think of my analogy with the Pretty Baby movie and this film that the White House is now claiming to be the catalyst to all of this?
You know, I think almost everything that comes out the White House these days is ridiculous. You know, but there was one thing I wanted to say. You know, you put me in a really bad position tonight with your attack against Whoopi Goldberg.
Again?
You know, only because the rape comment that Whoopi Goldberg made, you know, that was her not really understanding what Roman Polanski was actually charged with. She wasn't sure whether he was charged with rape or statutory rape. And she didn't know the proper legal definition for what she thought he was charged with. So her whole sentence was taken out of context, a lot like these black Muslims, not the Muslims, the the new Black Panther Party always tried to say, oh, our words were taken out of context. This was actually a time when someone's words were taken out of context.
But wait a minute. Whoopi Goldberg knew the case with Roman Polanski. Everyone knew the case with Roman Polanski. It happened in 1978. How could she?
Yes, she did. Absolutely.
How could she not? That's what I'm saying. How could she not understand the conditions of him fleeing the country?
No. The thing was, she didn't know what he was actually charged with, what he was officially charged with. She didn't know the charge. So if you actually, you know, you can go into YouTube at the commercial break and, you know, and find the video, and she's questioning what he was actually charged with legally. And that was blown out of context. I'm no Whoopi fan. I hate The View. You know, I can't stand those women. But, you know, when someone, you know, starts definitely towards taking out of context, I have to, you know, I can't, you know.
No, I understand that. I understand exactly where it is that you're coming from. But the bottom line was, okay, so Whoopi not understanding what happened or what exactly he was charged with, it still begs the question, why did she use the term he wasn't charged, I mean, what he committed wasn't a rape? I mean,
no, she actually, if you listen to the, actually go to the video and listen, her first thing, she wasn't sure if he was charged with rape. Now, it sounds ridiculous what she said, but, you know, she wasn't sure of what the actual technical legal term was for what she thought he was charged with.
Well, wait a minute. What was Roman Polanski officially charged with? And these are people who do a prep before their show. How could she not know?
You know, all of them are goddamn idiots, even if they do the prep work.
Well, okay. Yeah, I don't believe that they actually read any of their prep before the show, because I listen to them, and it's clear that they don't understand the actual issue that they're discussing.
Yeah, they don't know anything. They're just put on there to, you know, go up there and, you know, talk about whatever they think that they know, but they really don't know anything. You know, but I feel a little bit sorry for Whoopi in this particular occasion, because I actually saw the original broadcast, and she was, you know, not sure what the original charge was.
But with that being said, okay, well, Whoopi aside, and I'll grant you that, Whoopi aside, has Hollywood in any way punished Roman Polanski for raping a 12-year-old girl?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. They've done everything in their power to protect him and put him up as an upstanding Hollywood citizen who shouldn't be, you know, judged by, you know, normal standards.
So my question is with all of that here is a guy, right? He didn't, I mean, I don't want to sound provocative here, but I know I'm going to. This director of this YouTube 17-minute video, 17-minute trailer, he didn't rape Muhammad. He didn't show Muhammad naked. He didn't in any way sodomize Muhammad at all.
Even if he did, so what?
Well,
he's legally
exactly
allowed to.
It's being depicted in a film, but my question is that Hollywood in some sort of way is demonizing this guy for his art because they don't agree with it, but yet they celebrate people within this art who have personally done things that are more damaging. And I brought up the argument last week, you know, when we had F.A. Chulo on the show and Derek the Bounty Hunter, when I made the argument that, look, this guy should be allowed to depict anybody the way that he wants to according to the standards that have been set by the Hollywood elite. We can demonize anybody we want to.
Absolutely. I agree 100%.
Which is why I'm completely baffled by this.
Hollywood is full of a bunch of hypocrites, so you have to understand that.
Well, you're right, that they are hypocrites. They have clearly shown their hypocrisy here. That's, again, what makes me angry. What they don't seem to realize is that the American public, they're going to recognize and realize that the hypocrisy is so ridiculous that they have no choice but to respond effectively come Election Day. We've got to get rid of these groups or these factions of people. I believe that the media very soon is going to suffer the consequences post-election this year. Because I look at it this way. If Barack Obama wins, the media will suffer. They will suffer greatly. If they lose, they'll suffer greatly. I think it'll be even more so. Because they will be exposed for their hypocrisy. All the false polling, all the false narrative, all of it will be exposed. But I'm stunned at the people out there. And listen to me when I say this, folks. What I'm more stunned at today than any other time in my life is that this man was escorted by police down to federal custody to be asked about a movie that he produced and questioned about whether or not his movie incited violence all the way across seas instead of the authorities trying to find, or more importantly, focused on those responsible for the death of these four Americans in Libya, in Benghazi. That's where I'm stunned. Because,
but didn't they use an excuse that he was a federal prisoner at one time and was still under the bounds of the court?
Exactly. Yes, they did.
Okay. Here's the deal. Now, I'm gonna say this to you. This is a great, great point that you're making, Dennis, and I'm glad that you brought it up. Now, we talked about a story very early in this show's creation, back in February, and JC will remember this. We did a show early talking about this heavyweight guy in California. We tried to get him on the show. He had done this promo shoot. He was a heavyset black guy. And he signed a release, and the release pretty much said that we can use your picture any way we want to. And he signed that release because he was out there to make money. He went out there to go get a paycheck. And months later, he found his picture being used on a diabetes campaign for the New York, right, on a billboard for the New York City Health Department. And in the picture, they cut off his left leg and said that he lost his leg due to diabetes, even though he had both legs. He complained about it. He got media attention because his image was used in a false way. But he had no legal right to sue that organization because he signed a release. Now,
right.
Could this guy, this filmmaker, be possibly charged with a parole violation because he got people to star in a film, they signed a release, and he decided that he was using them for another purpose altogether, even though they were compensated for it? They have not been the focus of this media outcry at all. No one's looked at an actor. No one brought up an actor's name. No actor has been sought after by CNN and given their address. None of them have. In fact, these actors came forward to the media to say, hey, look, we got nothing to do with this. We got duped. Nobody would have ever known who they were or cared. The only person they cared about was the filmmaker who dubbed over their lines or dubbed over the whole production. They were not in harm's way.
By the way, that filmmaker has been banned from entering Germany, in case you were wondering.
Been banned from where?
Germany has banned him from entering the nation.
Why is he banned from entering? What does Germany have to do with that?
Because I guess he wanted to visit Germany, and the government in Germany said, you stay home. We're not allowing you in the country. It's a provocation. Well, don't forget, Germany is home to millions of Muslims, mostly of Turkish descent. In other words, they're showing their tail.
That they are. White Mike! Mike, do you know the name of this book that I'm talking about? This new book?
Unfortunately, no. I've never heard of it.
Okay, all right.
But the whole thing is just terrifying, man, because no matter what this guy did, you know, he's the filmmaker. Once
right.
those actors sign their release, he's allowed to do whatever he wants with that film.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
they don't have, even if they had script approval, the absolute worst they could do is sue him. But there's no reason for the law to get involved in this. There's no probation violation for him to change his art.
Well, why don't you move this a little bit further? What about if you write a book and you give them a release and they actually screw the whole book up? You have no recourse. And you're the author.
Well, you can sue them. That's about it.
Yeah, and you'll still lose.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
I mean, look what happened to, of all people, Tom Clancy. He had his book, and it was Muslim terrorists. And when Hollywood got it, all of a sudden the Muslims became right-wing terrorists.
Mm-hmm,
and
I
he was bitching
that.
About it, but nothing he could do about it. He sold the rights.
You know what? That's an interesting point. That's an interesting point that both of you are making, because you know what? I go back to, and I'll put it on a probably more ridiculous scale. Ike Turner. I'm sure that you're all familiar with Ike Turner, Ike and Tina Turner. When the script for What's Love Got to Do with It was written, they went and visited Ike Turner while he was in jail, told Ike Turner that they wanted to do a movie about he and Tina, and Walt Disney came to him and told him, and they asked him for the exclusive rights. They sat there and talked to him about the script, and he signed a contract with them while he was in jail and got $1 million for it. And then, of course, What's Love Got to Do with It comes out. Ike Turner was on our show, starring Buck Wild, on Hot 97 in 2002. He was on the air, and we asked him about the release of that film and the fact that he was considered a consultant. I believe he's a consultant on the film. If you look at
the credits.
The credits. Thank you. Thank you, Mary. The credits. He's given credit for that, and he said on our show that he in no way would have ever allowed them to depict him in the light that they did, because he said it was completely false. But he had no recourse because he signed a contract that allowed them to do what they did.
Well, you know, they wouldn't have actually had to go to him to get his clearance at all. The only thing they'd have to clear is if he owns the publishing rights to those old Ike and Tina songs, they would have had to get him to sign off on that. That's why, you know, there's a movie coming out where Andre 3000 is playing Jimi Hendrix.
That's right.
And the Hendrix family has been notorious for not signing off on music rights. There was some movie a few years ago where I think LL Cool J played LL Cool J or Lenny Kravitz, somebody played Jimi Hendrix, and the family didn't give them the music rights. So you can make a movie about whoever you want. I mean, they're a historical figure. You can make a film. You don't have to get their clearance at all whatsoever. You just can't use any of their copyrighted material.
Right, but for the purpose of authenticity, you want that music in there, just like, you know, when they did The Doors, you know, with Val Kilmer, they had to get those rights. But you know what? It's funny that you mentioned the Andre 3000. You mentioned the Andre 3000 thing. That the Jimi Hendrix film has been in talks since 2002, and they just got the rights this year.
And they're still not given the music rights.
They haven't been given the music rights?
Nope.
So what do they do when it comes to the music?
Got me, buddy. But yeah, there's no music rights given for the Andre 3000 movie. As of July of this year.
Wow.
So I don't know. I think Jimi Hendrix's brother or cousin or somebody controls the rights, and they're not giving them out. From Rolling Stone, it says, the Hendrix family is snubbing the film, refusing to use songs such as Purple Haze or The Wind Cries Mary. Instead, the makers will use music covered by Hendrix. So they're only going to have him covering Beatles songs, Muddy Waters songs, and Elmore James' Bleeding Heart, because he doesn't own rights to those.
So what about, talk about licensing purposes, then won't they be able to at least, like, play recordings of, like, in other words, like a radio station can play Jimi Hendrix, right?
They're not giving it out, apparently.
That's incredible.
Because they have the licenses for the songs.
Well, it's not going to be much of a film,
radio
then.
Station would be different. Don't they get blanket licenses if they pay the radio industry. Not the radio, the record industry.
The record industry. You're absolutely right. Yeah, right on point, Dennis. You're absolutely right on point. Yeah, if the radio station has a deal with the record label, so to speak, on their radio station, yeah, then they can play that music.
Right. Who's the enforcer for broadcast? They ask people to go around, and they will the industry will actually go to private functions and see if there's music played, and then they will fine you or sue you. Or if you play, huh?
Is that ASCAP or RIAA?
Yeah, that's it. ASCAP.
Yeah,
ASCAP
exactly.
Will give you a blanket license.
Exactly.
For radio stations.
Who's on the line? We got.
You're breaking up, Reese. Hell, you're breaking up, man.
Yeah. Terrible.
Okay.
6656. I don't know who that is.
This must be Bush's fault. He's breaking up.
Nonetheless. Yeah, but I find it incredible that...
What the hell did he say?
Back, I've got two questions into one of my
Hello?
I can't hear a thing.
Hello?
Wow.
Anybody can hear him? He's all breaking up.
No, he's totally gone.
No. He is gone.
Thank you, Blog Talk Radio, once again.
Reese is gone.
Blog Talk Computer. Get a new computer. You know, ask the Jets to pay for it.
Mike, let me ask you, if you're there, I got a problem here. What did you think of my analogy with Pretty Baby? As you said, I'm going to play.
I can't really hear you, man.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, just like the Verizon commercial.
What did you think?
No, he's breaking again.
You sound like Aquaman.
Where people be is this? Roger Ebert's actually on it.
We can't hear you.
Okay.
I think he needs a
now?
New theme song. Breaking up is hard to do.
How about now? Can you guys hear me now at all?
Yeah.
I can hear you, but I can't hear Reese.
That's Reese, by the way.
Okay, so you asked
you can't
about
hear
Pretty,
the Reese
you asked
at
about
all.
Pretty Baby.
Nada.
Hello?
Yeah.
No, I can't hear Reese at all. I think he's fallen off. Hold on.
Mm-hmm. This is just one of those days.
It's time to upgrade to a Mac.
Or an upgrade to a terrestrial radio station.
That would do it, too.
Dead air is terrible on a radio show.
Well, it looks like we kind of lost our host for one moment there, guys, so we'll just all stand by and until he gets
you
back.
You guys can hear me now?
Well, it looks like he's back already. Can you hear me, buddy?
Yeah,
I
can hear him.
Yeah,
there
I'm
you
here.
Go.
Okay. So my question was, what, Mike, do you believe? I mean, do my analogy using Pretty Baby in essence with Hollywood's hypocrisy here, because why would it be okay?
Well, Hollywood is totally hypocritical, but they're hypocritical in all sorts of things. When's the last time there was a movie that came out in the 70s that William Friedkin directed with Al Pacino called Cruising? You ever see it?
Of course.
Okay. That did not paint the gay community in a very positive light. It was about leather daddies or whatever, and the gay community lost their minds, and Hollywood flipped out, and it pretty much tanked William Friedkin's career. So Hollywood will allow some things and not others. You know, they had no problem with, I mean, there's been multiple movies in the past few years. There was one called Hound Dog with Dakota Fanning, where she's like a 12-year-old girl who gets raped by a teenager, and they had a rape scene. There was one just recently called Hick with the girl from Kick-Ass, whatever her name is, Chloe Moretz. And again, she's like 13 years old, and she gets raped by this guy, and they make that movie no problem. So I don't know if Hollywood, you know, is Corey Feldman correct that pedophilia is rampant in Hollywood?
Yeah.
I posted a Fox expose about Corey Feldman talking about that exact thing, is that pedophilia. In fact, I believe that the person who wrote some of the very intriguing insight to that, many people were attributing to Robert Downey Jr. Do you remember that?
He has a website called Crazy Days and Nights. There's a gossip website that supposedly Robert Downey Jr. and some rock star and some other celebrities that basically write the inside dirt on Hollywood. And they're saying that Nickelodeon is basically a pedophile's dream. There's a guy, there was an old show back in the 80s called Head of the Class or something, where it was a gifted and talented high school in New York City. Remember it?
Howard Hessman and Robin Givens were on that show.
Exactly. Well, there was a big fat guy on that show. His name is Dan Schneider.
Yeah.
He is a big producer slash director for Nickelodeon. He does all these, you know, Nickelodeon shows with teenagers, you know, like the one with Selena Gomez and Amanda Bynes and all this. And the scuttlebutt is that he is a massive pederast, that he's impregnated, you know, a couple of the girls, and he still has a job.
Really?
There's a story that he's actually the one that knocked up Britney Spears' little sister when she was 13 years old or 14 years old or whatever she was.
Little Jamie Lynn Spears?
Yep.
You got to be kidding me.
Well, I mean, look, if you just spend a little time and you cruise through Disney Channel or Nickelodeon, you will see some of the most inappropriate attire for 14-year-old girls imaginable.
There's something deeper in this, something very deep. It's a spiritual sickness.
I understand exactly where you're coming from, Dennis.
You see a reflection of Hollywood's values. And, you know, I don't know how religious you guys are, but there was an article in Spirit Daily last week saying that, in essence, a lot of these people channel the supernatural, and they publicly come out and say that they get their strength from the supernatural, from Satan. And I know it's not going to be politically correct to say what I just did, but, you know, some of the movies that we see seem to have a black cloud among them, that all the people involved die, and in fact, even people involved in production have things happen to them. You can't discount some of the stuff.
It's funny that you know, Mike and Dennis as well, you guys bring up a very, very valid point. But I'm going to ask you this, because this is what I believe the issue is when it comes to young Hollywood and these Nickelodeons and Disney Channel characters. You know, you look at the personality of people like Amanda Bynes as of recently, Miley Cyrus, who's pretty much right there, you know, within that sort of age group. But I'm gonna take a stab at this, okay? And you guys tell me whether or not you think I'm out of my mind here. If it is indeed true what Corey Feldman said about the pedophilia of Hollywood, if it's true that these girls are being abused in the way that people suspect that they're being abused in this industry at a very young age, if it's true, could it possibly be is that these young ladies are an easier target because they want stardom more than girls like Olivia Nunn or Cameron Diaz is? Like, you know, the young starlets who are in their 20s today are harder to get on the casting couch, hint, hint, than these young girls like the Honey Boo Boos. And I don't want to go that far, but you get my meaning, is that these young girls are so desperate.
I think that the casting couch is an essential part of Hollywood. Joe DiMaggio's sister wrote a book about Marilyn Monroe. And her quote from Marilyn Monroe when she finally made it, this is going to be a little rude, she said, "I'll never have to suck another Jewish dick again."
Reese was on to something a couple of weeks ago. Remember when he talked about his experience on the radio station and had the problem with Clear Channel? Was it Clear Channel, Reese?
Yeah, it was Clear Channel.
And you remember what they said to you?
Right. That I couldn't talk about Bill Clinton in any disparaging way because of the work he had done for Clear Channel.
All right, so follow the money in Hollywood. Maybe people aren't speaking out because the lure of the money is too great and they don't want to screw the pooch.
But no, but that goes back to my point when I'm saying about these young girls.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Reese, don't forget about the young
producers.
Don't forget about the young boys also.
Yeah, there was
in general.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, that these Hollywood producers, they know that these kids will do anything to become famous, and are they now using that as a way or a means to then abuse them sexually?
Don't discount the parents when they wave the dollar in front of greedy parents. How many parents
absolutely.
Have we known in Hollywood that have ripped off their own children?
Well, you know, here's a question. You know, if you, are the parent of a Britney Spears, and some Hollywood producer, record exec says, you know, your daughter's going to be a star. We're going to make her a star. And I fully believe that in this genre of entertainment, it's like the studio system. They make people. If they put enough push and hype behind an act, they're going to be successful selling to these tweens. How many parents are going to turn a blind eye if they know their kid's going to make $100 million?
So you're telling me that we're living in a culture where parents will give up their children sexually for a dollar?
Some sure. I mean, not for a dollar, but for $100 million. Absolutely.
Take one for the team.
I'm sorry?
Didn't we have a couple of Hollywood stars, some child stars who grew up and said their childhoods were ruined because of their parents?
Yeah, Jodie Foster pretty much said she did a movie with Kristen Stewart, that David Fincher movie, Panic Room. And Jodie Foster had an article she wrote just recently where she admitted that she told Kristen Stewart's mom, "Don't let your daughter be an actress."
This seems
even
like
going further back, you had the young star of Donna Reed, and now he's in the 60s, his late 60s, and he heads a group, has been for a while, to combat Hollywood sex abuse because he said that he was subjected to the same system as a kid.
His name is Paul something or other.
Peterson.
Yeah. But, you know, there's a story that Natalie Wood was raped by Kirk Douglas when she was a teenager.
By Kirk Douglas?
By Kirk Douglas. And
yeah,
it was covered
that.
Up because he was Kirk Douglas.
Yep.
Oh, my
but,
goodness.
You know, the casting couch is endemic. I mean, Marilyn Monroe was a creation of the casting couch. You know, her
book, tell me that O.J. might be a murderer.
You know, the book that DiMaggio's sister wrote said that basically Marilyn was abused and taken advantage of by Hollywood executives until she made enough money that she didn't have to do it anymore.
How about Robert Wagner and the chick that fell over
that's
the boat?
Hollywood.
Oh, and now
oh, okay.
They're saying that he pushed her in the water and didn't rescue her and let her drown.
Yep.
Yeah, I've always thought this about Hollywood, that it was a very, very peculiar culture in and of itself.
It's industry town, no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah, it's just, you know, but again, this is exactly what I'm talking about as far as like this whole thing about, you know, condemning this movie about Muhammad and the what it is that's allowed within the culture of Hollywood that's permissible. You know, that's
look at Ice Cube. Ice Cube is a perfect example. Ice Cube and Ice-T. When they started out, you know, the FBI was looking at Ice-T, for God's sake, and now he's on, what, Law & Order SVU? And Ice Cube, who used to rap about, you know, killing Whitey and Kay's bitch and killing Korean grocers, is now making kids' movies?
Yeah.
So that's okay, I guess.
It's a very, very peculiar culture we live in.
But Mel Gibson can't put a movie in the theaters. Go figure.
Yeah, exactly. Jews are responsible.
Happy New Year, by the way.
Thank you.
Speaking of Jews.
And Jodie Foster took a bullet for that one, too. I mean, when's the last time Jodie Foster had a movie in the theaters?
She took a bullet for what?
She took a bullet from Mel Gibson. Remember, after he had all his problems, she did that movie, The Beaver? And that was right when Mel was still in the turd factory of, you know, his screw-up. Has Jodie Foster, an Oscar winner, had a movie in the theater since then?
Could this be why Clint Eastwood waited all these years before he spoke in front of a Republican committee? Because now he can say, screw you, I made mine.
Pretty much. I mean, what are they going to do to Clint?
Dennis, did I lose you?
83 years old.
No, I'm still here. I got you.
No, say again. Clint? I didn't hear that.
I said, do you think now this is the reason why Clint Eastwood broke his silence after all these years speaking in front of a Republican National Convention because he's in his 80s and he can say, I've got screw you money?
Sure. No, they tried to bury Tom Selleck just for being a board member of the NRA. I mean, luckily he's got enough fans and enough presence that he can get a TV show. But
this is the same group that bitches and moans about McCarthyism and the blacklisting from the 50s.
Well, that's what
it's partly with hypocritical bastards.
That's
what Have you noticed that extreme? Have you noticed that extreme Muslims and Hollywood have one big thing in common? That you're free to say whatever you want to as long as you don't disagree with them.
In the words of Ice Cube, you have freedom of speech, just watch what you say. Oh, Ice-T, I'm sorry. Got my ices mixed up.
But that's right. You have freedom of speech. Let's watch what you say. Yeah, I think that's exactly what the deal is.
I mean, when's the last time you saw a movie with Arabs portrayed as terrorists? I mean, it doesn't happen unless it's a damn war movie.
And this comes back, and I hate to say it, but I'm going to say it anyway, to Reese's case. If he was a liberal, you know damn right well they'd be storming the courthouse. But a black conservative? No way, Jose.
Oh, yeah, under the bus, buddy.
Well, listen, if there's one thing that I know about this current state, as far as it means, concerning my case, I heard this from a reporter, and I've said this a thousand times over and over again, that their response to that case was, it's a historical piece. And I understood the reasoning behind that. The understanding for me was that, look, the guy doesn't tout the right politics. He's against this, what's called the established media. He rags on us, he rips us apart, and he attacks us. So we're in no way going to support him in anything and everything that he says or does.
Yeah, but
look at Hank Jr. You know, Hank Jr. made an accurate comparison when he said that, you know, Obama meeting with Netanyahu was like somebody playing golf with Hitler, right?
Yeah.
Or him meeting. So, and Hank Jr. lost his Monday night football gig.
How many people have
said unpleasant things about Mitt Romney or George Bush, and they're lauded?
I had a friend of mine, and he won a Pulitzer in a group story. And when he was working up here, he's of Cuban descent, and he went to Cuba to visit family relatives, and he saw the media down there, and they lived like kings in luxury, and he asked some of them, why don't you really report what the hell is really going on in Cuba? And they wouldn't, because they were going to lose all the perks of the Castro administration, so they sold themselves. They're whores. Money always talks. Did we lose Reese again?
Sounds like it.
Ah. Must be Bush's fault again.
It's just weird. I don't understand. And if you look at the
I can hear the crickets.
Liberal,
nothing's happening.
You look at the liberal blogs online, the liberals are fully in support. They're so clinging to the story that this video is causing all the insurrection in the Middle East.
Which is bullshit.
Which is total bullshit. I mean,
these people just happen to have been driving around with a rocket-propelled grenade,
yeah.
And all of a sudden, hey, there's something on YouTube. Let's attack the American embassy.
Are you supposed to believe that?
I don't.
Libya had nothing to do with it. Egypt had nothing to do with it. Now, the other things that have gone on, like Tunisia and Khartoum and all these places, Sudan, yeah, but they're just hopping on the bandwagon.
And
they
if this president had any balls, he'd say, you know what? Government is not going to give him a dime, and I urge all Americans not to travel there, and we're not going to allow any of our airlines or their airlines to land in the United States.
Cut them right off on tourism. This president has fewer balls than the entire cast of The View.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a story on The Blaze right now that the State Department is talking about releasing the blind sheikh into the custody of the Egyptians for humanitarian and health reasons. No, he should be in jail forever till he dies.
Sounds like the Lockerbie bomber that Britain released, and all of a sudden he must have bumped into Jimmy Swaggart because he got healed.
Yeah, his cancer magically healed itself.
Right. You don't have to invade these countries. Cut them off at the dollar.
Well,
don't allow
their
flights to come back and forth. They live on tourism. What the hell they got, sand?
Stop importing sand. Oil.
Yeah.
I think you need to make these people fear the U.S. You know, Muslims are all about strength, which is why the countries where they're fairly stable has all these people we call bad guys. Like,
the funny thing is, we're going on the air. I can hear the blowback on the air with the delay, but we're on, but Reese isn't. Are we going to have our own show and invite Reese?
Sweet. But the only thing those people respect is strength.
Yeah.
And that's why Saddam was able to hold that country together for 40 years. When we capitulate like we're doing, there's no respect. So you need to, and I'm not a warmonger by any stretch, we need to bomb the crap out of these people. No troops on the ground. Just bomb them.
You don't have to bomb them. Cut the source of money. Stop giving the money from the taxpayer, for one thing.
Yeah, they're still going to mess with us. They're still going to mess with us.
Time and time again, if these people have shown the only thing they respect is a strong leader. Whether Saddam Hussein or Gaddafi, the only thing they respect is strength. You put their foot on their necks, and they respect that.
I mean, Gaddafi and Saddam basically dragged those people from being camel-riding nomads in the desert to having fairly modern societies. And he did it by crushing any radical Islamists that stood up.
You know, I'm wondering, what the hell did we do in Iraq? Because Iran had two enemies on both of their sides. They had the Taliban, which is no friend of Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side, they had Saddam Hussein, which they had a bloody multi-year war with. And so here we are going into Iraq. And I think the whole thing came to do with petrodollars.
Okay, we'll put him on now. He'll stay on in
his
Hey,
home. Here's Mary Mary. Hello, Mary Mary.
You remember when we had the first Gulf War?
Yeah, I'm here, Dennis. Okay, JC.
And when we had the first Gulf War, we didn't roll into Baghdad and depose Saddam. And the media lost their minds. They said, well, why don't you go get Saddam, finish the job? We didn't get Saddam because the first Bush administration understood what would happen if you got rid of him, which is what we have
and
now.
They made Colin Powell the hero. Do you remember?
Iraq is going to devolve into three nations. They're going to be a Sunni nation, a Shia nation, and Kurdistan. And it's going to be nonstop chaos and war, and that's why we didn't get rid
of him. Well, if you mention Kurdistan, what the hell is going to happen with Turkey? Because they don't want any Turks. I mean, they don't want any Kurds. Because there's a substantial Kurd population in Turkey, and Turkey still is a NATO ally for the most part.
There's a report today that the Turks were allowing fighters to cross their border into Syria.
You guys can hear me now, right?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah, sort of.
Welcome back to the Reese on the Radio Show, brought to you by WBZ, 10:30 a.m.
You guys are actually making a very, very a bunch of valid points. What I was very, very much interested in, and it's funny that this conversation has sort of spawned off into this, because it was the reason why I brought up the whole pretty baby thing, and about the state of the state of all of this and this outrage, was that Hollywood has been very, very reluctant to respond
I mean, the people who have responded have not been really, really like Hollywood elites. Bette Midler, Russell Simmons, Questlove, the drummer from Roots, they're the only people who have been made, quote-unquote, publicly outraged about this video. But the regular, other people, for that matter, in Hollywood have not said a word. And you guys heard about this story that happened just recently about I want to remember the name of the movie that he's directed, but there's this director that got a lot of heat from TMZ and some other establishment. I think Gawker was one of them. They gave him some heat about him saying that he didn't have a problem with incest, brother and sister.
Yeah, that's Nick Cassavetti.
That's him. Now, what did he direct?
He directed a few like small movies.
But he directed The Notebook.
Yeah, directed The Notebook.
Yes, he directed The Notebook. And he got a lot of crap about him saying that, look, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, who it is, if it's brother and sister, you know, and he was using the argument about gay marriage. You know, you love who you love, and he was okay with that. And a lot of people were saying that that was just over the top. But,
well, yeah, it's weird. I don't believe in it as something that should be condoned in society, but do I think that some artist should be able to make a movie about any subject they want and let the market decide? Absolutely. I mean, that's what we have the First Amendment for.
Absolutely. But I was stunned at the response that people gave to him about what he said about a brother and sister falling in love and having sex. In the same way that I was outraged at the response of the alumni at Columbia University 2 years ago when it was found out that a father who was a professor at Columbia University was having a consensual sexual a relationship with his daughter, who's in her 20s, and he was arrested because incest is illegal in New York, but the alumni and faculty members at Columbia University went on social media and said that it was wrong for him to be arrested because they're consenting adults.
That's crazy. I mean, who is it, John Phillips from the Mamas and the Papas? You heard the story about him and Mackenzie Phillips, right?
No, it wasn't Mackenzie Phillips. Another great case. Here's Mackenzie Phillips who says openly, and she said that on Oprah, and I don't even know how Oprah was able to respond to that. Because, of course, she's openly claimed, you know, her uncles and her brother and some other members of her family had raped her. I don't know how she was able to deal with that, but guess what?
She had a sandwich.
I didn't hear a lot of people in the media screaming at Mackenzie Phillips about her relationship with her father.
Well, I mean, just look at the way the media looks at domestic violence. You know, again, I hate to go back to Mel Gibson, but Mel Gibson's accused of punching that Russian gold-digging whore in the mouth, which, if you see the photos of what happened to her, there's no way a 5'10", 200-pound man punched her and knocked off one veneer. But Mel Gibson's a pariah. Chris Brown is on stage at the VMAs.
Yeah.
Okay. Chris Brown is not banned from the media. Charlie Sheen is not banned from the media.
A great example of that is, you bring up a great point, Mike, because there were people on Fox News who went down to the Today Show, right? When Chris Brown went to do his first national appearance, I guess his new album was coming out, and he went to go perform at the Today Show. So Fox News went down there with cameras to go talk to the girls, the young girls who were screaming in the crowds, who were holding up posters of Chris Brown's, you know, how much they love. Aside from the fact that there were girls in the crowd who said that he could punch me in the face.
Reese.
Girls had visibly had signs that said that Chris Brown could beat them up. But when they asked the girls about his case with Rihanna, the girls said, you don't know the whole story. You don't know whether or not she deserved it.
Look, man, I like Charlie Sheen, okay? I think Charlie Sheen is entertaining. He's a good actor. But Charlie Sheen shot Kelly Preston. Okay, he shot her, and he had a career.
Did he really?
He shot her in the arm.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
Hey, Ray,
and Charlie Sheen had a network show.
Charlie Sheen is the one man in Hollywood who is immune to
any type of repercussions.
Charlie Sheen shot John Travolta's current wife.
Yeah, he shot Kelly Preston. He says it was an accident, but how much accident is there when you're baked out of your mind on coke, when you're back to the gills?
Charlie Sheen called Denise Richards a nigger, and nobody said a word about it.
Charlie Sheen beat a whore in a hotel room, like, a couple of years ago. And he's going to go on Fox.
Well, you want to talk about a guy. I was just talking to Mary about that yesterday. Charlie Sheen is in a hotel at the Plaza Hotel with this porn actress, and he completely like harasses her, terrorizes that. And then there are photos released at the nightclub or the restaurant they were at earlier, and here's his ex-wife posing in pictures with the porn actress before he goes upstairs to the Plaza Hotel and terrorizes her while his daughters are sleeping in the what's that girl's name from the books, the Plaza Hotel stories. Oh, so little, they have a hotel room that's dedicated just to that girl.
Is it Madeline or something?
Yes, Madeline. Yes, they were in a Madeline hotel room. And he's downstairs terrorizing a porn actress.
Look, man, everybody knows when you're in a hotel room with a shady woman, when you don't see her, you have to make her keep clapping her hands so she can't steal.
Wow. And he was nice enough. But here's Charlie Sheen. You want to talk about the class of this guy. After everything that happened, before she goes to the public, Charlie Sheen sends her money. He wires her money and a note apologizing for the evening, and still this broad goes out and does Good Morning America and the Today Show to talk about what happened.
Well, she is a porn star, not somebody who's known for their class.
Anyway.
So I just find that alarming. Hey, JC, do me a favor. Go to a commercial break so you can give me a couple of seconds. I'm going to try to work on this computer thing. JC, are you there? I hope he's there.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Well, go to a commercial.
That's pretty good.
Go to a commercial break real quick. We'll be back. It's Reese on the Radio. Stick around. We'll be right back with more news, more views, and more mayhem. And maybe we'll get into some jigaboo time tonight. We'll be right back. It's Reese on the Radio.
I love commercial time. There's nothing there.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message. 4 years ago, we made history. Now it's time to move forward and finish what we started together. We have to show the president we have his back.
We can't afford to spend the next 4 years going backwards. I'm running to make sure that by the end of the decade, more of our citizens hold a college degree than any other nation on earth. I refuse to pay for another millionaire's tax cut by kicking children off of Head Start programs, or asking students to pay more for college, or eliminating health insurance for millions of poor and elderly and disabled Americans on Medicaid.
Have the president's back and register to vote. Go to gottavote.org to register now. That's gottavote.org. You know we've got your back. Paid for by Obama for America.
Last time on Reese on the Radio.
He said, "I am the Joker." But once again, he was still walking into a movie theater that was showing the Batman. So you're saying that this guy would have done what he has done, even if, like, Steel Magnolias was playing out there. He just said, I'm a Steel Magnolia.
It's Reese on the Radio weeknights right here on blogtalkradio.com.
If I don't recognize your name, you're Rod Nobody. Look, I don't make this much beef about my broad getting into the house to cook me a meatloaf. But they're really excited about this guy going from one souffle to a big zucchini. I don't know what it is, but she can't stop yammering about this.
Was it Michael Simon?
That's him. That's the guy. That's the guy, Michael Simon. Never forget it. Okay, I'll always forget his name because he's a nobody. But anyway, Michael Simon, the bald-headed guy, right? That's it.
Right, right.
Okay, so yeah, he wears a lot of plaid.
Yeah, that's
it. He's dressed like the chef. Whatever.
He's an Iron Chef.
Yeah. Is he an Iron Chef?
Yeah, yes.
Is that significant?
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Is it a big deal in the foodie world?
Yeah, it is.
Really?
Yeah, it is. It's pretty big.
Seriously?
Yeah, it is.
They can lick my balsamic vinegar.
It's Reese on the Radio weeknights right here on blogtalkradio.com.
We will not take a dime from Washington lobbyists or special interest facts. They will not fund my party. They will not run our White House. We're going to change how Washington works.
This headline in today's New York Times sure seems at odds with that promise to put Washington on the side of the little guy, not the lobbyist.
A rather long list of names of people who are working on Obama's transition team or who have accepted jobs in his White House.
I'm in this race to tell the lobbyists in Washington that their days of setting the agenda are over. They will not work in my White House.
The administration has hired several lobbyists, the president of a lobbying firm that worked for General Motors and Fannie Mae.
Sally Sussman leads Pfizer's powerful lobbying shop. She's organized events for the president, and she's also donated money for the president and bundled for him.
Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner appointed former top lobbyist for Goldman Sachs as his chief of staff, appointed to the number two position at the Defense Department, a former top lobbyist.
Hundreds of meetings between Obama administration officials and lobbyists, and no official record of who.
The number of fundraisers for the president have also benefited hugely from the energy loan program.
Isn't the president opening himself up to just a charge of hypocrisy on this?
Just a litany of people who have raised so much money who are clearly lobbyists.
President Obama hasn't even made a token effort to keep his campaign promises of more openness and transparency. It was all just another lie that was told in order to get elected.
Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama's attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey, guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi,
how you doing? I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
On this, the 17th of September, 2012, 36 minutes after the hour, and you know what time it is.
What do you want to call?
In the Jigaboo forum today, let's put on up White Mike. Perfectly fit.
Bleeding heart liberals in liberal areas getting killed because they're stupid. Okay. The first one is out of Spokane, Washington. We have a serial killer, apparently. Young man named Evandre Graham, who was described as a 17-year-old black male with a crazy eye. Back in May of this year, he attacked a woman named Charlotte McGill on a trail near the Spokane River in Spokane, Washington. He stabbed her multiple times. Didn't get caught for that one. She's the one that described him as a black male with a crazy eye. This past Thursday, he killed another white woman on the same trail, this time with a mallet. So he beat her to death.
Well, he killed one with a hammer.
The one in May he did with a knife. This one he did with a hammer last week.
Goodness gracious.
With a mallet.
You can't let this guy near a Home Depot.
You got that right. This is up in the homeland of the bleeding heart sensitive white liberal. Okay. I have another one from
Chicago.
Up in
the bleeding heart liberal.
Chicago. Oh, Spokane, Washington. Those are crunchy Birkenstock wearing hippies up there, buddy.
Right. It's California. That's like low-carb California.
You got that right. California with more facial hair and unshaved armpits on women. Yeah, I have one from J.C.'s neck of
what
the woods up in New Haven. We have another one. A young man who's described as a popular local cycling, vegan and underground music enthusiast got murdered in his home by a young man named Tashawn Fair. Apparently, this guy was one of these tight pants wearing hipsters, you know, the fixed gear riding bearded hippie types.
Right.
He was sitting at home, and this young man named Tashawn, I guess, knocked on the door, and this idiot opened his door.
Oh.
Okay. Duh. And young Tashawn came in and pointed a gun at him and then shot him.
For what?
The young man, Tashawn Fair, allegedly said he went to the house to juke the occupants. He said he knew that rich white kids lived there.
Oh. So he went there to go shoot the man, somebody with money.
He went there to rob him, and I guess he ended up shooting him.
This is disgusting.
The moral of the story is have a peephole, and if a young black dude you don't know is at your door, don't open the door.
Exactly.
Jesus, have some common sense.
Hello? What do you want, Negro? How can I help you?
There are no pig feet here, young man. Go away. And I have one from Burlington, Vermont. 36-year-old man was riding his bike on the 500 block of Rahoot Street when four black men approached him and asked him for money. He refused, so they shoved him off his bike, kicked his ass, and took his wallet, but didn't take his bicycle. So, and the suspects were described as black males between 20 and 25 years old. Again, people, don't ride your bike towards four young black men. It's not going to work out well for you.
Do-de-do-de-do, do-de-do-de-do. Hey, look, there's four black guys coming down the street.
You know, I mean, it may make me sound racist, but I have basically, I have what I call a three Negro rule. If I go somewhere and I see more than three Negroes, I don't stay. Because something bad's going to happen.
I am a part of that rule. I do not ride, you know, I don't believe in hanging out in any place where there are more than five Negroes in one place.
Well, look, man, because somebody's going to get their shoes stepped on, they're going to get their Air Force One scuffed, and there's going to be gunfire. I don't go to Mexican bars either. Okay? See, and I have like a three Mexican rule. It's worked pretty well in my 42 years. Now, I would rescind the three Negro rule to hang out with you and JC and Edward. Okay? Probably not Derek. If Derek was in that number.
Or James Montgomery.
James is just kind of like a loudmouth. I don't think he would bust a grape in a fruit fight. But Derek seems a little
I'll
off.
I'll have you know.
Hey, guys, James, can I jump in?
You know what I love?
James will scrap with a Negro.
One thing I will say about James, though, regardless of his party affiliation, this is what I do say about him, and I've known him since I'm 12 years old. What I love about him and the reason why I'm still friends with him. Also, Derek, I'll even put this on to Derek the Bounty Hunter, because I've known him since he was 17, and he's 41 now. I will say this. These guys, by hook or by crook, they don't care whether or not you're right or wrong in the equation. But they will defend you. If they are with you, they'll defend you right or wrong. Mike, I'll put it to you this way, Mike. If you punch the guy in the face without provocation, Derek and James, the first thing they would do is, let's go kick that guy's ass because you didn't like him enough to punch him in the face. That's the way they look at it. I'll give them that.
I will trust you on James. Really I don't know about Derek because he already threatened to kick my ass once.
Oh, no. He didn't threaten to kick your ass.
Wait a minute. Aren't you a personal trainer?
And I carry a gun.
What?
And I carry a pistol. So I'm not scared of him. I just don't really like being threatened.
No, I agree. I you know, look, he humbly apologized. He just said he's so
animated.
That's what he is. He's so animated, and when he's put in a corner, that's the way he responds. And I called him on. I said, dude, it was totally unnecessary for you to, you know, take the hits like a man. If the guy's calling you out, take it, man. Don't turn around all of a sudden. You want to turn it into a fist of cuffs because you can't defend yourself. Back it up. Back it up with facts. And he understands.
Hey, Reese, can I jump in real quick?
Go ahead.
Because one of the stories that Mike brought up is something I'm familiar with because I live, you know, right outside of New Haven. Now, I live in a suburb of Woodbridge, which is right outside of New Haven. Now, what they don't mention in the stories is that this kid who killed the white kid, it comes from a family who is notorious around here for breeding murderers, killers, and robbers. And JC might know about this woman. The matriarch is Barbara Fair. You know, JC, jump in if you're familiar with her name. But damn near everybody.
JC, do you know this woman, Barbara Fair?
No, I'm not familiar with her at all, no.
She is well known in the Connecticut community, supporting criminals, hookers, and every goddamn lowlife in this goddamn state.
When you say she supports them, what does she do? Does she put them up in her home, or does she
get
the bail money?
She She breeds them left and right, coming right out of her goddamn rotten cooch.
So you're saying that she supports the prison industrial complex?
Yeah. All right.
It's just crazy, man. I mean, I have a friend who was talking about moving to St. Petersburg. And he's a white guy, kind of with a brain injury. And he says, man, I found an apartment on the south side. What do you think? I said, are you retarded? They're going to kill you.
Did you ask him, was it on Martin Luther King Boulevard?
Man.
Hey,
awful.
Speaking of Martin Luther King Boulevard, I don't know if Mike mentioned to you, but a couple of days ago, I decided to Google the words, man shot Martin Luther King Boulevard. And goddamn, I came out with hits in almost goddamn every city in this country.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. Mike came.
Everybody,
I sent it to Mike.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like Chris Rock said, you know, Martin Luther King was a man dedicated to nonviolence. But if you go to any Martin Luther King Boulevard in the country, there's some violence going on.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that joke. You were absolutely right. Yes, Dennis.
Do you remember the story that you had? I just want to get away from jigaboo time and go to transsexual time. Do you remember the story that you spoke about a couple of weeks ago about Michelle Lynn Kosalek, formerly Michael?
Yes, in Massachusetts.
Sorry. Well, we just found out something. We just got a rare weekend decision from the federal judge that now the taxpayers have to pay for the legal fees.
Whoa. Not just the sex change, but the legal fees,
right,
that led to the decision?
Yeah, taxpayers are already on the – this is breaking from the Herald. Taxpayers are already on the hook for a transsexual wife's killer sex change operation. And now the federal judge who stuck him with the tab said in a rare weekend decision yesterday that Michelle Lynn Kosalek is also entitled to be reimbursed by the Commonwealth for years of legal bills.
So So all of the years that,
yep,
this killer has been sanctioning the courts to get this decision is now covered. The lawyer's fees are now covered by the taxpayers as well as the sex change in and of itself.
And
Judge Wolf
is
urging lawyers for both sides to meet and try to reach a resolution that will avoid additional litigation and costs fighting the order.
They think it's going to be $500,000.
Oh, my goodness!
Yep.
The bottom line is likely to be large, according to the memorandum issued yesterday by U.S. District Court Chief Judge Mark L. Wolf. The amount could be disclosed as soon as Thursday, the deadline Wolf has set for Kosalek's legal team to submit a suggested bill to the court.
And this guy is 63 years old. What's the point?
Well,
he's never.
And I'm
going to
tell you something else. Here's something else good. Now, the Massachusetts Health Commissioner resigned today.
Behind this?
And I think, what the hell has this got to do with anything? Well, I'll tell you. His decision comes as prosecutors are beginning the process of figuring out how to deal with thousands of drug cases handled by a state chemist who was accused of mishandling drug samples and tainting evidence. State police shut down the lab late last month after discovering that a chemist had failed to follow testing protocols and may have purposely mishandled evidence. Officials have produced massive lists of the chemist cases covering 34,000 defendants and more than 60,000 drug samples.
Are you kidding me?
The lab had been overseen by the Department of Public Health before being transferred to the state police as part of the budgetary realignment.
Dennis, when I was locked up in New York at Rikers Island, I was in a detention center. In Brooklyn, there was a case very similar to this where there was a Brooklyn chemist who also had done this same exact thing, but I've never heard. This is 34,000 people who are now, in essence, going to, if not get bailed, but they're going to get released on their own recognizance based upon these drugs.
And which means a lot of them have to retry them. Some of them might have died, which means the Commonwealth is going to be hit for false imprisonment. The taxpayers are on the dime for. In other words, don't live in Massachusetts unless you want to pay more taxes.
Listen, are you serious? The number is 34,000 defendants?
Yes, sir.
That is absolutely ridiculous.
I will give you the link on Facebook if you'd like, privately.
Please send that to me. That's a crap load. And we're talking about drug samples where people get an average of 3 to 5 years, and it costs the taxpayers already about $100,000 per defendant. And now they have to retry them?
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, listen, I've got a challenge for you guys. You guys just – Dennis, thank you for bringing up that. So I want to bring up this challenge. This is a very, very important challenge, okay? I don't know who can do this. Edward, you're very good at research, as well as White Mike and Dennis. You guys are great at this kind of stuff. I'm going to put this out there. I just sent you the link. I don't know who can come up with this, okay? But considering the fact that – okay, now I want you to – I really, really want you to think about this. And see if we can come up with a number for this tomorrow, okay? I want you to consider very serious factors here, because I'm going to do a YouTube video based on the numbers that you guys give me, okay? So I'm going to do the research myself and see what it is that we can come up with. On April 25th of 2008 is when my accuser made her claims about rape that happened 3.5 years earlier in what she said was October, September of 2004, okay? So let's deal with the genesis of this is April 25th, 2008. April 25th, 2008. The police then arrest me almost 6 months to the day in October 22nd, 2008. I'm locked up, extradited to New York on the 27th. I stay in jail until April 6th of 2011. My case, of course, is still pending until we have a court case this coming October 2nd. Now, I don't know how much it costs the government, in this case, because the government is in charge, but this is 4 years running now. This past April made 4 years from when she made the claim. October 22nd will be 4 years from the day that I was arrested. So I want an estimated number as to what it costs the government to try this case so far, and I am going to do a YouTube video this coming week that I will then send out to the press to talk about how much money the government is spending on my case with all of the mitigating factors with, you know, obviously her changing her story, all of these, other comments that have come out, her gun arrest that happened on Halloween weekend last year. I want to do a whole breakdown of that. Do you guys think that you can break down the numbers on that?
Oh, for sure.
I can try. Yeah.
Because I would think it
would be at least $3-4 million.
Or what cases like that cost the state government or the city government, whatever it is. But I'd like that number in real, real hard numbers that we could use. And follow those silence. But you get what I'm
saying? Shitload of money.
To be honest, it would take me more than a day or a night to get the type of figures, but it could definitely be done.
Okay. All right. No. What I'm trying to figure out is what exactly that kind of cost is to the city. Because some murder cases have been shorter than, I mean, I put it in this way. The perfect example. Timothy McVeigh was found guilty in a shorter time than it took my case.
Don't forget the lost time that's involved for the people who have to be interrogated and go to court, and they lose their time to work, and there's a lost time there, and plus also the time wasted by the system, which could be prosecuting more legitimate crimes.
Well, you know what? I've not had anyone say to me on that, as far as those people are concerned, I've never heard from anyone. who has said, by any means whatsoever, every person who's ever heard this story, they go, I've never heard of a rape case that took 4 years to prosecute.
Well, I found some preliminary numbers that says that to house somebody at Rikers for 1 year, just housing, is like $76,000.
Okay, so 1 year is $76,000. So 2 years, we're talking about $150,000.
Why didn't they incarcerate you at an Ivy League college? It would be cheaper.
You're right.
What happened to the good old work farm? It couldn't have cost that much to have you on a farm, you know, picking cucumbers.
Because Joe Arpaio's in Arizona,
you know.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, Reese.
You know, while I was there at Rikers Island, you know, they have these things where you can, you know, you can do, you can have a job, and you get literally, you get pennies on the dollar. So if you work the house detail, which is called, of course, house detail, where you pretty much mop the floors and you sweep and do all that kind of stuff, you clean up the bathroom, that will get you $10.80 a week from Rikers Island, also in Manhattan Detention. Where I also
is it taxable?
Another... Say again?
Is it taxable?
No, no. Tax-free.
How the hell did that happen?
$10.80.
There's a story that came out today that said that the manufacturer of our military uniforms, the BDUs for our soldiers, is going to be transferred from a company called American Apparel somewhere in Alabama, which is a private company owned by a former Army colonel, to Prison Industries Incorporated. And it's going to cost $6 a uniform more to make it at Prison Industries Incorporated.
So the funny thing is, if you ever read the International Mail Manual, other countries will not accept any packages as part of their mail stream from people who have sent anything made in a prison. Most countries forbid that.
They're going to lay off 200 people in this town in Alabama and give the work to prisoners, and it's going to cost us more. How the hell does that make any sense?
Well, it doesn't. Welcome to government.
I thought the point of having prison workers do it is it was cheaper.
Well, that's because the money that they're spending that's extra is going to the man hours for the people to supervise them, and that's the prison guards.
And somebody's getting a cut on the backside, I'm sure.
Oh, of course, because they signed the contract with them in general.
Yep.
And you mean Blagojevich isn't getting a cut in any of this stuff? Well, that's why he's making plays.
I'd love to see what Blagojevich is doing now.
Does Blagojevich ever look like he's had a cut? His hair is just outrageous.
Yeah, that's the only cut that he should see, Edward, is a haircut.
He's trying to avoid prison rape right about now.
Say again, Mike?
He's trying to avoid prison rape.
Does he take his showers at 3 a.m.?
They're never going to touch Blagojevich in jail because all he has to do is say, hey, I know Obama, and you know they love him there.
And Tony Resco.
Yeah, exactly, and Tony Resco. He's got plenty of fans up there. All right, so if anybody could come up with those numbers, anybody who could come up with those numbers, let me know within this week. I'd appreciate it. That's the beginning of our week this week. We will see you tomorrow. Thank you. As usual, Reese on the Radio returns tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel.